Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of A Place in the Conversation. My name is Dan Neiswanger. I'm the spiritual formation catalyst for A Place in the Conversation, and we're glad to have you join us today. Again, I'm flying solo again today. My partner, Nick Everhart, is not here. I've taken our show on the road and traveled down to Locust, North Carolina, and I'm going to be spending a little bit of time talking with Jeremy Hyde, who is the pastor of Mission Baptist Church in Locust, and again with Pastor Ronnie Russell, who was the pastor at Mission Baptist Church for about 37 years prior to Jeremy. And what we're going to be talking about today is the transition that that Ronnie and Jeremy went through together, and because it is extraordinary. And it is when you talk about transfer of leadership within organizations, it's not always easy. And these two gentlemen have done it amazingly well, and amazingly well for the benefit of Mission Baptist Church. So Jeremy, Ronnie, why don't you just say hello and introduce yourself a little bit?
Hello.
Okay.
I am. Yeah. Exactly.
No, if you're going to do that, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, wait a minute.
Wrong button. Hold on.
There we go.
Okay, yeah. Good. All right.
So, Dan, thank you for having us and giving us the opportunity to have this conversation, because I think probably being in the bubble of it happening with us, I don't think that we necessarily realize how unusual this type of transition was, and I guess in a way how successful it was. Okay. And I've really looked forward to us sharing this story together.
Cool. Good.
I'm Ronnie Russell, and I was the pastor that came up with this idea. I got some information from others who had tried it to some degree, but I remember thinking, as Jeremy alluded to, that pastors who have a long tenure and then leave, it's a long interim period, usually, and during that time, the church sometimes falls apart because there's no leadership. And I didn't want the church to fall apart because I loved it too much. Not that I needed my legacy to go on, but I just did not want the church to fall apart.
Yeah, Ronnie, I remember the first time that you shared like your vision with me. Like we were having lunch in Locust, and we were talking about the church and about your decision to retire, and you were kind of strategizing that out a few years into the future, and you started to share the vision of, yeah, I want to help the church transition to their next pastor, and want to make that a smooth transition. I want to make that successful for them. And you know, I told you I'll own it, that, you know, when you shared it, my wisdom was, I don't know why you're going to waste your time. You know, that's an awful lot of energy, an awful lot of effort. And for the vast majority of churches that are blessed to be able to have a pastor stick with them for 35 plus years, the pastor that follows is there 6 months, maybe a year, year and a half. And, you know, they're basically an interim. Even if they do have an interim pastor, the next settled pastor is basically an interim until they can kind of figure out who they are, and then they can move on to their next settled pastor that is any kind of length of time. And so my wisdom to you was, Ronnie, it's a great heart, great vision. Admire that, but man, why in the world would you waste your time? Because there's no way in the world it's going to work, and it's going to be a heartbreak thing for you. So share a little bit about the vision for it, right? And I guess I'd just like to have the two of you guys talk about how you made it work, because honestly, it rarely happens.
Well, I think there's one thing that I wanted to kind of say, kind of from building the foundation of the, not just the story, but how this process worked, was when I came to Mission, I had been through some very significant life-altering events. I had been pastoring a church. I had gone through the death of my first wife to cancer. I had left the church that I was pastoring a year later, went to work in a hospice organization as a chaplain and bereavement counselor, met Shelley, who is my wife now. We got married about a year after I went to work at hospice. And with all of those transitions and in my mind feeling like that I had done a poor job as a lead pastor before, that I had made quite a few mistakes, and you know that's a whole nother backstory. I wasn't looking to be a lead pastor again. I didn't want that. I wasn't pursuing that. You know, and when Ronnie reached out to me, because we knew each other, not really well, but we knew each other, and said, you know, he sent me an email just out of the blue that his associate pastor had taken another position in another part of the state, and he's getting ready to start the interview process, would I be interested? Well, I quickly responded yes, because of Ronnie's reputation and the reputation of the church, and just felt like with everything that I had been through that mission would be a good place to land as an associate, mm-hmm. not having the pressures of the lead pastor, but yet being a support to him, having a couple of niches within, you know, my role within the church. So when I came to mission, that wasn't even on my radar. Yeah. That was not even anything that I was entertaining. You know, it wasn't like 2 years at mission and then I'll start applying. I was perfectly content in this associate pastor role. Yeah. I was able to, you know, be on the worship team a couple of times a month. I was teaching a Sunday school class once or twice a month. I was filling the pulpit, you know, once every, you know, 4 to 5, 5 to 6 weeks, I think at the time, yeah. Initially. And I was good with that, yeah. You know, helping with pastoral care. You know, there was just a lot of things, and I was good with that. Yeah. And, you know, and I just, I had no designs on being a lead pastor again at all.
Good.
Well, let me say something in the beginning, because one thing I wanted to avoid was to look like I was choosing my successor. And I honestly did not think about that when we called Jeremy to be our associate. Some people, I'm sure, thought, oh, he's done this. He's handpicked his friend. As Jeremy said, we weren't that close. The one thing I remember about you is that we would sit together at conferences at the same table. We just wound up there. Mm-hmm. And I liked Jeremy because he always laughed at my jokes.
Yeah. Somebody needed to.
You know, that's kind of like a theme, right? That's kind of like a theme. If you don't laugh at his jokes, you know, if you don't think he's funny, then the relationship's not going to work.
It's,
right?
It's not. It's just not. It's
well,
not.
That's, well, that's true with anybody, is it not?
With most, it's more true with you than with a lot of people that I know. So,
But I will say about your humor that I even noticed early on was that, you know, it was a humor where you didn't take yourself too seriously. Yeah. You didn't take what you did too seriously, and even church humor. Mm-hmm. It was just enough truth to be funny, but it wasn't enough to be cringeworthy. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. It was just like, you know, I've got this humor in proper perspective.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not jaded, I'm not bitter, but I'm not going to take all of this too seriously either.
Well, I think what that kind of reveals, like, is that you have yourself in perspective.
Yes.
Like, you know, mm-hmm. like I'm comfortable with who I am. I know yeah. who I am. I don't need you, you know.
That's
I don't
right.
I don't need you to stroke me and to tell me that I'm okay and that I'm good and I just yeah, hey, I'm okay.
Yeah.
And so we can just laugh at each other.
Exactly.
And that just is yeah, I think there's value in that.
There is.
Yeah. So go ahead, Ronnie. You were saying.
Okay, so Jeremy has done a great job of outlining what did happen before he was called as pastor. One of my goals, and I know this sounds like self-aggrandizement or something, but one of my goals was that I would leave the church and nobody would even know that it had happened.
Yeah.
Because the transition, I wanted to be smooth, mm-hmm. and to go into the next pastorate, I wanted to have a good background. And I had worked on that because I just thought it was so important. And then after I started thinking about it, we came up with a four-phase part of my retirement. The first year, I was going to be three-fourths a pastor. That included salary and everything else. And this is when I was about 61, 62. My goal was to retire at 64 or 5. And so that was the first phase. The second phase cut it into 50%. The third phase was 25%. But by the time we got there, the pastor search committee was already talking to Jeremy. And I don't think I knew that was happening until maybe after the first one, mm-hmm. which is another good thing.
Yeah.
So I actually cut that last one short, the last fourth of that plan, because I thought it was just time to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ronnie, I don't think there's anything about self, you know, aggrandizement there. What I just am humbled by and honored by the sense of, yeah, like I had a season where I was the shepherd of Mission Baptist Church, and my season is drawn to a close, and I want what's best for the church, and that's part of shepherding. Is mm-hmm. succession planning and making sure that the church steps into their next season in the best way that they possibly can, and I need to step away whenever it's right for mm-hmm. them and everything. And I think that's beautiful. I mean, it's I don't know how many times I've sat and watched and looked at pastors in different places and said, yeah, you know, your heart's not in it, but you're not willing to let it go. And so there you are. Mm-hmm. And so and you have no plan for the future, and your identity is totally wrapped up mm-hmm. in what you do. And since you have no plan for the future, your identity is wrapped up in what you do. You're incapable of letting go mm-hmm. of this ministry that you've had. And what it does is it strangles the church, and it strangles the people mm-hmm. of that you are called to care for. And so I think, far from a grand self-aggrandizement, what it's doing is revealing your heart for people and for watching, want to see the best for everybody. So mm-hmm. I just thank you for it. You know, so that was your plan, and I remember you talking through that, and I had the privilege of kind of being front and center a little bit as a member of Mission. As the church walked through it, I wasn't any leadership, so I wasn't mm-hmm. involved in those conversations. But how did you guys navigate some of those conversations with the leadership? How'd that go?
Well, being a congregational church, we had to vote on it. Yeah. You know, Baptists vote on everything. And so we had two or three sort of town meeting mm-hmm. type things. People expressed their opposition to it, and which didn't bother me because I had a lot of opposition expressed to me over 37 years. Thick skin, I think, is what they call it.
Yeah.
So we did talk about it and with the congregation. And when it came to the final vote, sometime into the process, there were 12 people who voted against it. Mm-hmm. That was the number. But when we got home that day, my wife and I were pretty much fully aware of who they were because of things they had said.
Yeah.
So that's how we talked to the congregation about it. And anything else you want to remember, Jeremy?
I think one of the things that I remember most about that particular period of time, I do think one of the things that had a negative impact on the church is the deacon team at the time waited too long before they formed the pastor search team. Mm-hmm. One of the things that stands out during that period of time after the vote to approve his phased retirement, and I don't know where I heard this phrase, but anything with no head is dead and two heads is a freak. Mm. And Ronnie had announced to the church his intention to retire. We have approved this phased retirement plan, so he is no longer the visionary future leader. Me as the associate pastor, you can't lead from the second chair. Mm-hmm. So Mission ended up in a holding pattern longer than I think they needed to be. Mm-hmm. So I think by the time, I think they waited a year, didn't they, before they...
That sounds right.
Yeah, so we were a year into the retirement plan, so we were at the 25%, almost to the 50.
Yeah.
Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Before the search team ever really got formed and moving, when people would come to me and say, well, and ask me the question, aren't you going to take Ronnie's place? My first response was the church needs to go through the process.
Yeah.
Anything that would be viewed as a rubber stamp would have a negative impact long term. And the only way that I would even consider becoming the lead pastor under these circumstances was to go through the process like any other candidate.
Yeah.
And the search team did a really good job once they got formed and once they got going. They opened up resumes for a certain amount of time. They went through the review process. They went through an interview process. If I recall, they interviewed two others mm-hmm. in addition to me, and there might have been more. Now I can't remember the exact number.
Yeah.
But my thought process was, if it's meant to be, if this is the Lord's design, then the whole process will bear itself out. Mm-hmm. I literally was not worried or scared or concerned about how the process would go, because if it wasn't in God's design for me to be the lead pastor, then God would either bring somebody in that we would work well together and I would continue being the associate pastor, or if it wasn't a good fit, God would open up a door somewhere else. I was good with any of those scenarios, and not to be kind of flippant, but with everything that I had been through, this was like, it's all, whatever happens, it's okay.
It's okay.
It's all good.
Isn't that interesting? Like, so like that's, I think there's value in that, right? There's value in that life experience and saying, look, mm-hmm. I've been through the good, I've been through the bad, I've been through the downright ugly.
Yeah.
And I know what it is to experience the faithfulness of God in the midst of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so here I am. This is going to be a season of transition.
Yes.
And in seasons of transition, anxiety within institutions and congregations gets high. There's going to be high anxiety.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm not going to be anxious about it.
Right.
And
yeah. And let me also say, I was willing to, by this point, I was willing to be the lead pastor.
Yeah.
I didn't interview with doubt. I didn't interview with hesitancy. I was willing to move into that role if that played itself out. And there's two things that I want to share about that, because I think this is really important just in terms of my willingness to even embrace the possibility that this could happen. Because, you know, I wasn't at Mission that long before mm-hmm. we had this conversation. And I can't remember which happened first. There was the day you took me to lunch and said, and if I don't say the quote right, you know, say what it is. It said, I feel like it's time to let you know that when I reached out to you, I wasn't just looking for an associate. I was looking for someone that I hoped could take my place as the lead pastor. And you waited a while before you shared that with me. Because if you'd shared that too soon, I probably would have been, I'd have been squealing tires out of the parking lot, because I wasn't ready for that, right. But the other thing that I think was really significant for the church to see, and this was a transformational week or 10 days. You were in South Africa mm-hmm. for 10 or 14 days?
12, probably.
12, okay. And literally, those 12 days, everything that could have happened in the life of that church happened. One of our senior members who had been a part of that church for decades had a really bad brain aneurysm, and the family made the decision to take him off life support. And I was right with that family, and Ronnie being on the other side of the world, it was going to be virtually impossible for him to get back. So this family looks to me to walk with them through the funeral and planning the funeral and executing the funeral, and two Sundays where I had filled the pulpit and there were emergency surgeries and we were hosting a fundraiser for a local family and people had to step in and take over my duties for that fundraiser. But I think I've always looked back at that week as one, it allowed the church to see someone else during those critical moments in the life of a church.
Yeah.
That, okay, Ronnie's been here. He's been a faithful pastor and shepherd. But there are others that can do this. Mm-hmm. And that's the same week that my mind began to change. That maybe this is where God was leading me. And it literally, all of that converged during that 12-day period of time.
Well, during that 12 days, I'd forgotten that it had such an impact on the transition.
Mm-hmm.
And because I remember you sharing that with me. And
yeah.
People would say to me, boy, Jeremy did a great job at that funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gave me the confidence that he could handle it,
mm-hmm.
or at least part of it.
Part of it, yeah. Yeah.
And I want to say also that I never, and we never thought that this was a perfect plan. And I mm-hmm. think we kind of glossed over one of the imperfections, the no head thing.
Yeah.
And yeah. I didn't anticipate that. I knew it could happen, but I didn't really anticipate it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also you talked about God's leadership in all this.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I just make that assumption that people are going to know that. But that was a very important point you made mm-hmm. because we did seek
yeah.
God's leadership yeah. and the Holy Spirit.
I think there's something like whenever you mention that no head thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. I've in the churches I've pastored, it's whenever you announce that you're retiring, nobody cares what you have to say anymore, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
whenever it's like everybody cares what you have to say, like, you know, they won't put plates on the table until you say, oh yeah, use those plates, right?
Yeah.
It gets everybody cares what you have to say about any little thing until you say, oh yeah, by the way, I'm resigning.
Yeah.
I'll leave in 6 months.
Yeah.
Those 6 months, you know, nobody could care. They're done.
Yeah,
they could care
that's
less,
right.
They could care less what you have to say. And so that was an interesting season. But I wonder if that wasn't necessarily a good season too for people to look and go, well, wait a minute, what's happening, and to feel a little bit of the anxiety
mm-hmm.
and then to have that weekend, those 12 days, and go, oh, okay,
yeah,
we felt the anxiety of, well, who, what, where,
mm-hmm.
and then, oh, okay,
yeah.
Jeremy could do, wow, okay, here's
yeah.
a
yeah.
here's hope, here's possibility, here's a future.
I think what made the no head thing probably harder for the church is that if the search team had moved a little bit quicker, we did go through several months where there was a bigger door going out than there was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's natural. Yeah. That's natural during a leadership transition.
Yeah.
But I think some of that could have probably been staved a little bit sooner. But again, I think all of that was very much a byproduct. And there was the uncertainty, like there's a search process and, you know, people coming to me saying, you know, we would like for you to consider this. And I'm like, well, I am. But there's still got to be an interview. And, you know, so it did leave a big
yeah.
time of uncertainty of just what mission's future might or could look like.
And I think there's wisdom, too, right, in saying that this is our system. This
mm-hmm.
is what we're going through, and we're going to walk through it. No matter where it, you know, no matter what it looks like and everything,
mm-hmm.
you know, Jeremy, as I listen to you talk and tell the story about it, in case you're not aware, we're in the offices of Live Again Ministry, and they've just received an incoming phone call, and so we'll let that pass. Okay, but as Jeremy, as I listen to you talk and tell the story of this, part of me like listens to that and says, like, this whole process was healing for you. Like, this whole
oh,
thing
yeah.
was, like, mm-hmm. was restorative for you.
Yeah.
Like, so...
That was kind of a byproduct, too, wasn't it?
It really was. Mm-hmm. And I can remember very vividly the Sunday of that funeral that I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically, get done with our second service, start setting up for the funeral, change into my suit, because I don't wear one on Sundays, go into the funeral, go into the burial, and finally getting home, probably 5:30 or 6 o'clock, and my wife had put a couple of steaks on the grill, and we just sat down. And I get emotional thinking about it. Just how healing that week was for me.
Yeah.
Because when I left the church that I had left to go to this hospice organization, from a leadership perspective, I was beat up.
Yeah.
I had gone through some very hard, some of it my own doing, but had been through some very tough church leadership circumstances that can leave a lot of people questioning, do I really want to do this yeah. mm-hmm. for the rest of my adult life?
Yeah.
And it was a reaffirming of what I believe God had called me to do years before.
Yeah.
And we sat there that night and talked about it, that if God led us into pastoring mission, we would do it.
You would step into it.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. And it wasn't just me. I mean, Shelley's like, I'm with you in this.
I'm in. Yeah. That's cool.
I'm in.
I want to share just a couple of things from the last days of my pastorate. One was I was so beat up and so tired emotionally and physically, not just because of that transition, but there's a long period of time when you know you're going to retire. You know next Sunday is going to be your last Sunday. And so I was thinking, I'm not sure I can make it one more week. I wanted to run away then. I wanted to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was an interesting dynamic. I remember the first Sunday after I'd retired, Judy and I decided to have church at home. And so we were talking about it. Before we started talking about it, I said to Judy, my wife, I said, you know, it's 8:45. The first service started at 8:30. It's 8:45 and nobody's called me. I guess they're getting along okay without me. That was said in jest, but there was some truth to it also. Everybody wants to feel needed, and I didn't feel unneeded, but it was really a strange feeling just to be there.
Yeah.
And also after you became the pastor, Judy and I determined we were not going to worship at the church.
Mm-hmm.
Have grandkids there then and still do. And that's our home church still. But I wanted not to be visible and to let things transition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of wisdom in that, right? That there's just a lot of wisdom in a season of, you know, previous pastor not being around, let the new mm-hmm. let everybody, you know, learn mm-hmm. to take, look.
I said 6 months. It may have been a year.
May have been a year.
It may have been, yeah.
Yeah. I, like, when I retired from First Baptist, you know, part of my thought, oh, yeah, I'll still go here, you know. But after a couple of weeks, it was clear, yeah, you know what, this is not entirely healthy for them. Mm-hmm. And so I need to just fade away for this has been about a year, and it's when they get their next settled pastor, we'll mm-hmm. see how that goes. But it's at a great place. I'd love to worship there, but they need to be able to. It's healthier and, mm-hmm. and it helps. But Ronnie, I just want to ask you this question, right? So when you first shared that this is the plan, this is what you want to work towards, you know, I told you not to waste your time, right? And obviously I was wrong, and it worked out really well. But if you could say something to other, you know, pastors who are in positions of leadership and are thinking about seasons of transition, and really this would apply to any organization, anybody who finds himself in a position of leadership and is starting to say, hey, you know what? My time here is shorter rather than longer. Like, you know, I'm looking at my own life and I know that I'm not going to be here, you know, forever. What would you say to people about starting to think through that transition of leadership? A couple things for people to wrestle with so that the organization might do it well.
First of all, you were a naysayer at the beginning of this, but I also want to tell you, some people actually thought it was a genius plan.
I know. That's why I told you I will not. I told you when I said I want to talk about it that I would own it, that I was one of those. And
well,
and,
I don't know if I'd ever told you that some people were very positive about it.
Said
let's do it, because we were known as an innovative church doing things that nobody else had tried around here.
Yeah.
So that was important. And about the leadership, first of all, I would say this is not for everybody. This plan is not for every church. Yeah. And I don't know what the criteria would be. Probably would have to be a healthy church before it could
happen. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. So as people are starting to retire from any profession, in some cases, they wouldn't have the opportunity, or in most cases, they would not have the opportunity we had to make that transition from me to Jeremy. So during that time, I think it's a time to reevaluate your life, which we talked about, any profession that someone is retiring from, and to find out what gives you energy and what gives you life. Because there's, in any job, there are a lot of negative things that just suck the energy right out of you in the life. So I think that would be important to find out what, even if you have to do some kind of psychological test, the Enneagram or something like that.
I know that there's been a couple times of transition in my life where getting away to a career development place and sitting down with somebody who is good at that. And really helps you think through, you know, what your giftings, what your abilities, where can you best use those. Talking with somebody like that is extremely helpful.
I think one of the many layers that made this as successful as it was is Ronnie was in a, and you use the word, I'm not retiring, I'm refiring. You had already begun the groundwork of Live Again Ministry. Your passion had shifted into, you still loved the church. You still loved the local church. But your passion of how you wanted to invest your time and your energy in the work of ministry had shifted. So you had something lying just ahead, or actually kind of came alongside. And I think that made a big difference, because it seems that you either see pastors retire in one of two ways. They hang on as long as they can, and then they retire and they kind of disappear, or they retire and do interim pastor after interim pastor after interim pastor, you know, for several, you know, years after that. Ronnie's retirement was very different in that he was tired, for sake of a better word, of just kind of the grind of the day-to-day life of a church. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't in a place where he didn't know what was next. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself, which kind of leads to that hanging on.
Yeah.
You know, he was at a place that he was ready to say, it's time for someone else. That's the first factor that has to go into a successful transition. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter the person or the church that follows, if that mentality and that mindset isn't in place from the transitioning senior leader, it's not going to go well.
It's not going to go well.
You know, everything else has to build off of that.
Jeremy, I think that's really good, right? And I really appreciate that. And I think so. And that, as I'm listening to you talk about that, it makes me think about the importance and the need for leaders, pastors, leaders in any organization to take the time to do self-care, you know, and to make sure that you're taking care of yourself and that you are healthy emotionally, physically, and spiritually.
Right.
Because only then are you going to be able to do the things that are best for the people that you're leading. And if you're not willing to take that time, if you think you're too busy and you can't afford the time to do the self-care,
yeah,
well, then you know, everybody down the stream, everybody down the line is going to suffer for it.
And that really was at the heart of your desire for this transition, that it wasn't about you.
Yeah.
It was about the church and what would be best for the church going forward.
Yeah. Well, that was my goal. And as I said, it wasn't perfect. But another factor we haven't mentioned is that Jeremy and I were friends then.
Mm-hmm.
And continue to be friends. Yeah. We'll have lunch occasionally and just to catch up. And that's important because sometimes a successive pastor and the previous pastor just are not compatible.
Right.
And that can be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can say this in without reservation that I have not had a bigger cheerleader outside of my wife than Ronnie Russell.
Yeah.
And that's always been genuine and sincere,
yeah.
You know, and so it's made it a lot easier to come to him and say, how did you navigate a situation like this? How did you deal with, because look, we know the same people, you know, so I can go and say, tell me a little bit about so-and-so,
you know. And in some cases, I didn't want to tell you because you needed to find out for yourself.
there's a lot of truth in that too, like in history. Like, you know, when you walk into a church for the first time as pastor and you don't know the institutional history and there's nobody who really knows it and owns it, you have a history book that's been there for 35 years. So you know 35 years worth of history.
Yeah.
And you can say, hey, you know, this is going on. What do you think's happening here? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'll tell you what's going on. 25 years ago, we did this, and this is, and there's a little bit of anxiety and stress hanging on.
Yeah.
And this is what this is.
Right.
It's like, oh wow, it's got nothing to do with me. That's got a mistake he made 25 years ago. It's still haunting you.
That's kind of
probably a lot more of that than we would admit.
Yeah,
probably so.
So, I think it's been a good experience, and as I said, I didn't always want to tell Jeremy what I knew about a certain family, let him find out for himself. But sometimes I thought it would be helpful if he knew some skeletons in the family closet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, we didn't have any at my church.
And not in your church and not in your family, right? I mean, that's like, let's just be honest, right? That's it, yeah. I mean, that's it. So, but that's cool. Guys, listen, I want to thank you for taking the time to be able to share it. And because it's unusual, right? It's not, and just thank you both for, you know, for your leadership, for mission, you know, and for the the community here at Locust and for the church as a whole, because, you know.
Just one more quick thing. The most important question that the three of us have for the day is, where are we going to eat?
Yeah, that's true.
That's right. It's about that time.
I do have that is a good question, I'm back in Locust. I lived here for 6 years, and one of the things that I can count on every time when I come back to Locust, that there's a couple restaurants that have closed down, and there's a couple new ones every time.
Yeah,
every
that's
time
right.
I come back,
and they're all fast food, right?
Yeah,
most of them are. But you know, but there's a couple of
and understaffed.
I was driving through, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, that's a new name. So let's figure that out. So yeah, that's true. That's true. Where's lunch?
Yeah.
And the most important question is who's buying?
Right,
yeah. Ronnie? I was like, Live Again might be able to float this.
Yeah,
one, right?
I think so.
Well, maybe a place in the conversation.
There might be a place.
He invited us. Remember?
That's right.
That's okay.
That's just all common right. Curse.
Okay.
Well, everybody, thank you. Thank you for listening. And we held it on the rails for a certain amount of time. And now we're kind of back to where we were.
For 37 minutes, we held it on the rails.
We held it on the rails for 37 minutes. And then this is kind of how we live life together.
Yeah. Honored to be a part of the conversation. Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Yeah
same here.
Welcome. You're welcome. And so for all you leaders out there, as you're leading your organization, whatever it is, be it a church, be it a service group, be it a small group, you know, at your church, no matter what it is that you're leading, know that thinking about who the next leader is going to be and who's going to carry on the work that you're doing is important. And one of the big things I think that we could take away from this conversation is that whenever, as leaders, we can get our own egos out of the way, we can get ourselves out of the way, and we can be thinking about what's in the best interest of the people that we are leading, that it's then that we'll be able to do transitional leadership, stuff like this, and we can help place people in positions of leadership so that the group that we're leading is going to do well in the future without us. And rather than feeling like, well, they're doing it without me, I'm not important, we need to look at that and say, yeah, you know what? I helped them prepare to do well without me. And that's probably one of the best things that as leaders that we can say. It's like, you know what? I prepared people well so that they can succeed even when I am no longer with them. And so that's huge. So again, thank you everybody for being a part of this place in the conversation. And until we meet again next time, may you just be abundantly aware of the Spirit of God alive and well and at work in your life.